Green Scene on the Pat Kenny Show with Repack. Does your business use the three bin system? Learn more about your legal recycling obligations at repack.ie.
Now, every Wednesday on the PK Show, it's a pleasure to listen to Ruth Freeman, Dr. Ruth Freeman, Director for Science at SFI, talking about really obscure scientific developments with an environmental twist. And I'm delighted, Ruth, because I have to declare, in the solar farm business, and the impact on solar farms, on panels, on diversity for birds. Because one of the great things about living in Enniscorthy, I have a bird tray outside my sitting room. I love all the birds, from the jays to the tits to the crows and the whole lot of them. So what have we learned about solar farms and bird species?
So with any kind of renewable energy, I mean, any development is going to have an impact on the environment. So when we're thinking about renewable energy, what we want to do is put in the renewable energy, but have the minimum effect on the biodiversity in the environment, because that's a really important carbon sink as well. And this is new research that's from Cambridge University and the Royal Society for Protection of Birds in the UK. And they looked at a number of different kinds of solar farms in East Anglia. And these solar farms were managed in different ways. So one type of farm was specifically managed for biodiversity. So they left in the hedgerows, they positioned the panels so that there was space for the birds, ground nesting birds, and they enabled a very biodiverse environment. The other one just sort of was left as is, and then they compared that to farmland. And what they found was the farmland with the mixed habitat really did very well when it came to protecting biodiversity. And it had three times more birds than the farmland around it, more species and more individual birds. So this is very interesting, because actually it's a real challenge. Farmland and ground nesting birds don't go well together. I mean, our birds in Ireland have suffered pretty catastrophic declines. I mean, birds like in Wexford, like the curlew, we see far fewer, times now. So this is really interesting.
And especially wintering birds.
And wintering birds as well. So this is very interesting research, because what it's telling us is there are ways to do both. There are ways to put in renewable energy, but also protect biodiversity.
So is it that the panels are set 0.8 of a metre above the... sort of vegetation underneath the panels is facilitated, because they're obliged to keep the hedgerows as they are, which would be good, and so on. So, however, in California, there's a particular... So our panels are mostly, when you look at them, they're black.
They're photovoltaic panels.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Whereas different panels have a different negative consequence.
Exactly. And there are other types of solar farms. So this is where people might hear, well, one day I hear solar farms are good for biodiversity. Another day I hear they're bad. And that's because there are different kinds of solar farms. So as you say, mostly we use photovoltaics in this country and in Europe. But there are also concentrated solar plants. And these use mirrors to concentrate sunlight to heat things like liquids or salt. And they create electricity that way. Now, these, because they're creating these beams of concentrated heat, they are killing birds in huge numbers. So this particular farm, there's over 3,000 birds killed every year. And the birds actually essentially combust. They get burn injuries in midair.
Do they crash into them as well?
Well, they can also do that. But in this case, they're called streamers because their feathers essentially go on fire as they're flying through these concentrated heat plumes. It is horrific. And I suppose this is where we need to think about renewable energy technologies. How can we put them in harmony with nature, not where they're going to do
now,
damage?
Now, I'm going with you on the birds. Okay. But now, mice to mice, mouth to mouth resuscitation and Lazarus-like recoveries. Now, this will take me some convincing.
This is some really nice work from the University of Southern California looking at caregiving behaviour in mice. And we do know dolphins, elephants, chimpanzees, we've seen examples where they will care for another member of their tribe or their species in the wild. But we wondered what happened in mice. So what scientists did was they anaesthetized a mouse and they put him in his little cage and then introduced another mouse in. So this little mouse would come in and encounter an unconscious mouse. And what do you think they would do? They probably should try to get away. This could be a sign of danger. But actually, most of the time, the mice will spend time trying to revive the other mouse. So if you give them 13 minutes, they'll spend half that time trying to get the other mouse to come too. So they will sniff them, they'll groom them first, then they will start sort of playing and licking with their eyes and their mouth, and then they will actually open their mouth to try and move their tongue out of the way to see if they can revive the mouse. And incredibly, sometimes they put a little object in the unconscious mouse's mouth, and in 80% of cases, the other mouse mouse will remove that object from the mouth. And this is very interesting because when they look at what's going on in the brain of these mice, they are getting that hormone oxytocin, the one that gets released in women after they give birth. It's kind of called the love hormone.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is part of developing social cohesion among animals. And it happens among humans.
But just say a mice died, could it resuscitate it?
Well, no, they're not doing CPR. And these mice, their heart hasn't stopped.
I kind of read into it that it was kind of like a mouse version of CPR.
Yeah, well, no, it's not really. But I suppose that the mice that did get this care also woke up quicker. So they did benefit from the care. And interestingly, if the mouse that came into the cage knew the unconscious mouse, they devoted more of their time and attention to trying to revive the other mouse.
And what does this tell us then?
Well, I think it tells us that these social bonds driven by kind of what we might see as altruistic behaviour and care are far more widespread in the animal kingdom than just maybe us and a few of the other big mammals that we probably empathise with more. So in fact, this kind of behaviour could be everywhere. So there's
animal instinct.
Yeah, there's a much deeper social fabric maybe going on in other species than we've given them credit for.
A queer one, but great stuff. Dr. Ruth Freeman always bringing us gems from nature and from science. Thank you so much as always. Now,